This is Remote Ruby.
Have you any remote idea to the meaning of the word?
What's up, Andrew?
Jason, how's it going?
It's good. It's lonely without Chris, but hopefully we can fill that Go Rails void in our podcast today.
So I guess for those of you who don't know, Chris got married and they are on their honeymoon a little bit north of me in North Carolina.
It's kind of a shame he didn't want to come hang out with you while he's on his honeymoon.
Well, number one, I don't want to hang out with him. I don't want to hang out with anyone. Let's just get that very clear.
Well, that's depressing.
Well, it is, but I also like not being sick. Yeah, he said something about that and I thought about it and I was like, dude, this is your honeymoon. Don't try to hang out with me. But what I can do is just kind of casually show up in the background of all their photos. So I think that might be the plan.
Down with that. Yeah. I was bummed for them because the wedding was supposed to be in a couple of weeks from now. And our friend the pandemic ruined that. So I'm glad they were still able to have a get together with their family mm-hmm. and all that good stuff.
Yes. They changed their names to Mr. and Mrs. Go Rails on Twitter. And I really liked that.
Yeah.
That's called brand recognition, y'all. Take some notes.
Have you been doing anything fun since I talked to you last week?
So last week I was about to truncate 250 million rows and there were looks of, oh dear, you poor boy. So the weekend was eventful. I didn't sleep all weekend, as one can imagine, because truncating 250 million rows just doesn't, you know, there's
a toll on a person.
But it does, but there's not like, it's not going to go 100% right, you know, especially when you're like coordinating asynchronously, like in the middle of the night. Mm. So there were some issues, but they weren't large, but I think we kind of got it all mostly taken care of. I mean, there's still a few random issues because we use Solr, which is Elastic, but it's just like from Apache based on Java, but it's like a searching thing. And because we deleted all these rows, there's been like, you know, you have to re-index all of those like records. So there have been a few issues because that re-index took longer than we anticipated, although I kind of thought it would, but they were pretty confident it wouldn't, but it did. So there were a few things we had to deal with, but for the most part, it went pretty smooth, but it really kind of threw my sleep schedule off kilter.
Do you get any like recovery time off like Monday or Tuesday or just straight through?
My boss was like, please take a day or two off. And I was like, yeah, I will. And then, you know, on Monday, like we wake up, we're like, did I sleep Monday? I have no idea at this point. This entire week has been like a blur. But Monday morning, like that's when everyone starts getting on the app, you know? So we kind of had to be there to triage support. And so no, not really. But I mean, not until the end of the week. So yesterday I took most of the day off and today I haven't really done much. So I probably won't really do much more.
Mm, that's good.
Yeah, but I'm glad it's over. Let's just say that.
Yeah, I've not worked. I don't even think I've actually worked with Elasticsearch.
Oh, really?
All my search, like I'm familiar with that. And I'm familiar with the name Solr, Sonar, whatever one you're using.
Solr.
Clearly, I'm not familiar with the name either. Most of my search life has been like PG, like in Postgres, either using like the PG search gem or even just straight up searching in like Postgres SQL. So
consider yourself really lucky because like that's like perfect, right? Where you're searching your database. So you literally search through Postgres. But when you introduce something like Elasticsearch or Solr, now all of a sudden you have data in two places. And it has to be indexed and it has to be, you know, all this stuff. And what we were running into is a lot of issues between like the data that was in the database and the data that was in Solr. And sometimes they would get out of sync just because of the sheer amount of like records we have. So it's just a bad time. At my last job, not at CoFund, at the one before that, we had Elasticsearch. And I mean, we kind of ran into the same issues where I mean, your data basically almost lives in two places now. And if they get out of sync, it's just bad. And if you accidentally re-index everything, your app is just foobarred. So it's just a massive pain. But
you'll be massively surprised at what I'm about to tell you. So one thing I've always been interested in is, and maybe there's something like this for Rails, but one of the Laravel packages is called Scout. Mm-hmm. And it has an Algolia driver by default. But like you just drop this trait, like a module in your model. It's called searchable. And then you can have it sync up with Algolia and stuff. And it's supposed to like push all that to a third, you know, it's a third party service if you set up Elasticsearch, but it's pretty interesting.
I mean, I imagine it would work the same in Rails if you used Algolia, because you're not hosting Algolia yourself. Like you're hosting Elastic and Solr yourself. So that's right. The problem.
Yeah, the benefit for this one, like for that library, is that it just does a lot of behind the scenes work for you. But I'm sure there's something like that for Rails.
And Laravel has awesome stuff baked in. What?
Gasp. We might as well just change the name of this podcast.
I mean, I just don't really want to write. If we could have Laravel on Ruby.
That's the dream.
Yeah. It does sound like a nice dream.
The problem for me is I just am so ingrained in Ruby and Rails. And for better or for worse, like that is just, I'm comfortable with it and I am proficient in it. And like there's a lot to be said for being proficient in something. So
there is like that comfort too. Like right now, I guess this is a good topic and or question. So I have started having wrist problems. Like, I want to nip this in the bud right now because I know people who have wrist problems and at this point in their lives, they're like 20 years older than me and they're not good. Like, it's a bad situation where their wrists are just completely messed up and they're having to maybe have surgery or, you know, they're in a lot of pain. And I don't want to be like that. So, I mean, I'm a massive procrastinator in almost every other area, but I need to deal with this like right now. So I am starting to look at, okay, what can I do for my wrists? And like number one, I think I need to get a new keyboard because I realized this keyboard is kind of high and like I have like a wrist rest, but I tend to rest my wrist on that. And when I try to not rest my wrist on that, it feels like the keyboard's too high. So number one, I'm probably looking at getting a new keyboard, but do you have any thoughts, suggestions on what I can do to not be in pain for the rest of my life?
I wish I did. I'm just going to be as honest with you as I can. I don't know anything about that stuff. Like so
you never had it?
No, I had carpal tunnel when I was younger, but that's before I was a programmer. Like I spent a lot of time on the computer, but you know, I spend way more time now as an adult. And luckily, just so far, I've never had those problems. I used a Microsoft ergonomic keyboard for a while. Mm-hmm. I bought a vintage Apple one from like the 80s that was like split. But other than that, like right now I use just a Magic like keyboard and a Magic trackpad. So I'm probably literally the worst person to ask because this is probably what will kill my wrist is using this stuff.
Really? Because I feel like, well, I mean, maybe. I don't know. I mean, that those keyboards are so low though. I feel like that probably, like my keyboard is at least an inch off the like I have like a gaming keyboard because I just like pretty colors. So it's time to do away.
I always wanted to get into mechanical keyboards because like I know people who like really nerd out on that stuff and I want to be that person. But then I'm just like, this keyboard works.
And yeah.
Shiny mine, thing over here and I'm gone.
Mine's mechanical, but I want to nerd out on it, but then at the same time, I'd rather just have the cool thing and not have to put in the work to get it.
Same. Also, it sounds like you want to not have wrist problems. So have you looked at like split keyboards and stuff?
Yeah, I have. I mean,
I saw you post this on Twitter because I slid back into Twitter.
Yeah, we should talk about that later.
Daniel Pritchett, who responded to you, he used to live here in Memphis. He was like one of my early mentors. He knows a lot about that stuff. I saw him tweet at you. I would listen to whatever he had to say because I know like he's researched and spent a lot of time on that stuff. I'm also sitting here putting my hand sideways like I'm typing on a sideways keyboard like an idiot.
Those exist. I've seen those.
No, I know. I just look like an idiot because I'm just sitting doing that in thin air.
Yeah, a lot of people said that there were like yoga stretches you could do for your wrists and that you can massage them. And okay, I mean, also you say you look like an idiot and I'm over here looking like I'm praising, you know, like the air or whatever. But there were a lot of people...
Almighty mechanical keyboard.
The almighty mechanical keyboards. There were a lot of people that said I could do a lot of orthogonal like stretching and, you know, for your fingers, hands, wrists, forearms, your biceps. So I'll probably look into that a little bit. I have a standing desk. It doesn't seem to truly help. Although last night, and I caught myself doing this, when I get more drowsy, I realize that I've started tending to lean, like I'll like kind of almost rest my head on my hand and propped up against like my arms of my chairs. So I caught myself doing that. I hadn't caught myself doing that before, and that definitely would not be helpful. So I need to do that. And one of my arms on my chair is loose. I need to finally fix that. That's been on my list forever. Probably yeah. Still will be.
The one thing I just try to adhere to is keeping your arms flat on the workspace.
Mm.
Like your elbow... How do I say this? At 90 degree angle, like your elbow, your arm, mm-hmm. forklift. I try to do that, and maybe that paired with the lowness of my trackpad and keyboard has been good. I also have, like, getting into like full ergonomics, I have my iMac on an arm so that my neck can stay straight. So I try to adhere to that. I'm not always really good at it. I find myself like slouching throughout the day, but I've tried some health things like in my diet the past week. And so I've been like antsy to stand more. So I'm just trying to adhere to that when I stand too, like keep my arms straight and my eyes forward. It's going all right.
Yeah. Someone said that usually like the first indication that like when you start feeling wrist problems, it probably means that you're not sitting up straight and your ergonomics are off. And I had flashback, dude. I flashback to my mom like screaming at me for my entire childhood, sit up straight. So my brother has whatever it is when your like spine is curved. I don't have that. The doctor literally, she took me to the doctor for it. The doctor was like, no, he's just lazy and he won't sit up straight. So and I was like, yeah, fair enough. I had no argument here.
I see a chiropractor. Not because I'm like one of those people that thinks like chiropractic like fixes everything that's wrong with you ever, but just because I carry a lot of like tension in my back, and a lot of it is because like I'll slouch during the day, and that actually really helps. If anything, it just feels good to hear your back pop. Mentally, that makes me feel like I'm relieved. So,
yeah, I mean, I would go get massages and stuff. I'm just paranoid, absolutely paranoid.
Massages are that's probably my favorite self-care thing in the whole world.
Oh yeah, dude. Same here. I love it. When I love myself, I get myself a massage.
Are you paranoid because of COVID?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so the first outing I had was at the end of April, beginning of May, I think it was. And it was right as like Memphis like slowly reopened. And so I went and got a massage because the place I go to is we do temperature checks at the door. We only let one person in at a time. You know, like you have to wash your hands and keep your mask on. So like I felt pretty comfortable there. But yeah, I used to try and go on the reg and I haven't been able to do that.
Maybe I'll look in town because I'm sure there's a place that's doing safety correctly. Yeah, I want to be safe. I mean, at this point, I've lost 2 family members to it, and it doesn't look like it's slowing down. So I'm more so scared about all the people that are saying that after you have COVID, because my mom was like, are you scared that like you're going to die from it? And I'm like, no, I'm scared about what comes after, because a lot of people are talking about all this stuff with their lungs and their heart, and I don't want to deal with that.
Yeah, I mean, just full transparency, I personally am scared to get it. Because of like my health, I have a couple of risk factors, one being just my weight. And like, I was really scared if I get it, it would do me in. That and my parents are in their mid 70s, but that like my dad goes to work every day. He's cautious, but I don't think he's like super concerned. So I guess if he's not and I'm concerned about him, then
someone's got to be concerned for some. I mean, what is the old saying where, you know, at some point you're going to have to start looking after them. I mean, my mom was down in Myrtle Beach and I went down and she said something and I'm just like, all right, it's time to educate. I had to have my say. But yeah, I have some risk factors too. Mostly the one that I almost never talk about because I'm like mostly really ashamed of it. And it's the fact that I smoke cigarettes. So I am mostly afraid of that because my lungs could be better. So sure. That's why I'm kind of freaked out about it.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with being nervous about a virus that has killed so many people.
Yeah. But I think you're right. I think if I find a place that is being safe and doing what needs to be done, then I probably should go take care of myself. That's something a lot of people have been saying recently. And you need to take care of yourself. I'm like, what? I am. What are you talking about? And then I'm like, no, I'm not.
Yeah, this is really fascinating because it's been like taking care of yourself for me has been on my mind a lot recently because like I'm 31, I have two young kids, and I would sure hate for something to happen to me that I could have prevented. You know, if I get into a car wreck, I can't, you know, maybe I could prevent that. But like eating and how I manage my stress and manage my mind, I could pretty easily probably add several years onto my life if I just change little things in my life right now.
Yeah. Okay. So that's interesting. And I feel like this is worth talking about just because, I mean, we're all going through this at this point. So also what you made me remember is someone on that thread on Twitter I made said that stress can be like a really big factor in contributing to wrist pain. And I was like,
really?
Well, shit. I don't view myself as a stressed out person. Other people think I am. I think I'm really chill, but I also just have just rampant ADHD. So I don't really realize I'm stressing, but I don't have anxiety. I know, I believe you have, but I'm not anxious, but I do stress and it's harder for me to realize that I am stressing because I don't really focus on it as much, if that makes sense. Yeah. But for the diet, that is something that mine was like completely out of control. Especially when the pandemic hit, because I was like, well, I'm not going out and I'm not going to the rush. I'm not going anywhere. So my lazy self was just like, dude, DoorDash probably took a lot of my money. Dude, I just started shipping it in.
If DoorDash had a loyalty program, I guarantee you I'd be top tier. If I earned a status with them for like,
yeah, mine would be top tier as well. My roommate jokes that there's this barbecue place in town that I only found because of DoorDash. And dude, it's so good. It is such good barbecue. And my roommate likes to joke that like the only reason that they're able to stay in business is that I'm supporting them so much. But I realized like this can't go on. Number one, I was spending an outrageous amount of money. And I'm in a privileged position where I don't have a lot of expenses and I'm young and I only have to pay for what I need. I was concerned about it, but not from it wasn't that I couldn't afford it. It was just like, this is ridiculous. And also I was eating crap. I was just eating pure crap. So I got Blue Apron.
The meal delivery, like kid mm-hmm. service.
Yeah. And I freaking love it. And it has completely transformed my diet. And I eat so much better now.
That's awesome.
Wait, yeah. How long? 4 or 5 weeks, I guess.
For a while now then.
Yeah. So what they do is they send you the box. I think everyone kind of gets that. But inside of the box, I love it because it's perfect for my brain. They package like the materials for each meal into their own kind of bags. There's multiple baggies, and then they put the name of the meal on it. And then they add your meats and stuff like that. And then they send you the recipes. And I'm pretty sure you can go online and watch them make the recipes, but it's really good food. My roommates will come in and they'll be like, dude, what are you making? And I'll say something that like before I didn't even know existed, like rice cakes. And I'm just like, this it's really opened my eyes to a lot of food that I didn't even know existed, and it's really good. And my roommates just got so jealous that they were like, all right, screw it. We're going to get our own too.
Damn, we missed an opportunity to get Blue Apron to try and sponsor a podcast.
Blue Apron, sponsor this podcast. Are they on Rails? One of those businesses is. There's like three or four big ones.
Those things came up so fast.
They did.
There's one meal delivery service, and then all of a sudden there's like 20. That's cool. We tried that a long time ago, maybe even before we had kids. And I don't remember why we stopped, honestly. I have a really difficult relationship with food. I don't know. I like from the time I like kind of got into my high school years, it was kind of like doing things more on my own, you know, like going out to eat on my own, things like that. Like I just got to where I couldn't control myself eating. I got pretty overweight in terms of healthy for my height. And like 2011, 2010, I was like, I'm going to do better. I lost 60 pounds and probably like the healthiest I've ever been. And then, yeah, something just happened after I got married, like where I just eat and eat and eat and eat. And like, it's kind of embarrassing because like, I can just eat disgusting amounts of food. And, you know, I kind of like yo-yo diet. So I like try a diet, lose some pounds, come off of it. And that's probably the biggest like ailment. Like, I think it's my, like how I eat is the biggest contributing factor to all that. And so like, that's what I've been working on this past week is we've just been eating way healthier foods. And right now I'm trying to like pose it as an experiment. So like I recently had blood work done. So I had labs and all that. And so now I'm like trying to see if I eat like this, you know, like these healthy foods for, you know, 2 months, will my cholesterol go down? Like will my blood pressure go down? But I've noticed that this week, maybe it's the placebo effect, but I've had just tons more energy. And like the more I've been eating better, the less I've been craving what I consider kind of the crappy foods. But I'm like, I've even noticed it at work too. You know, I have ADHD, which I found out like a year ago. So I take medicine for that. And some days I like won't take my medicine and I'll be like, whoa, like I feel focused, not as focused as I'd be if I took medicine. I'm still obviously distracted, but I don't know. It's interesting. It's just interesting how much food has an effect on the rest of your life.
It is. Number one, congrats on eating healthier, and I wish you the best of luck. Number two, it is freaking hard because the healthy food doesn't have all those chemicals that make you addicted to it. That was when I was like, damn, why does all this healthy food taste like crap?
Right. Yeah, I've been really having to put myself out there, like eating meals that normally I'd be like, this would kind of gross me out. And some of them I'm finding like I love. It's hard for me to talk about because like I've told so many people so many times, like, oh, I'm like going to lose weight this time, or like I'm going on this diet, and then I fall off of it. And I'm like, you know, there's like a shame that comes with that. So
yeah,
if this works out, I'll talk more about what I'm doing. But really, my end goal is just, I just want to feel better and I want to live longer.
Yeah. I wish you the best of luck, dude. I know as like a person like that you can do it. I also know as someone else with ADHD that like the yo-yo of like life is constantly going up and down. I feel like that constantly. And you said that thing about being off your medicine. That made me think, because when I'm off my medicine, granted, I'm on a much higher dose than you, but my doctor told me to try it. They were like, because I don't remember what we were doing, but they were like, you know, try it. Don't take it for a few days and then see how you feel. And they were like, there's no side effect of not taking it. It literally will be out of your bloodstream in like a day or two. And I came back all pissed off. And I was like, you freaking liar. There absolutely is a side effect to coming off of it. And they're like, okay, let's talk about that. And I explained it. And they're like, have you ever considered that's how you feel normally? And that was not a good day. So it's hard, dude. It's hard to take care of your health, especially with everything going on right now. That's why Blue Apron really helped me out, because I used to be a picky eater and then I stopped being. And when I went to college, and at some point in college, I completely went off the wagon in terms of like health. But then I started dating this girl who, she was a really good cook. And I learned at that moment that I will eat anything that is placed in front of me if I don't have to go hunter gather it, you know?
Right.
If it's in front of me, I'll eat it. And that ended any picky eating that had existed prior, because now I will literally eat anything that is prepared for me. But then we stopped dating and then my eating habits went back to crap. But now that Blue Apron, because I mean, I had an ADHD coach, which also, just side note, was the most helpful thing I've ever done for my ADHD. Really? No therapy, psychiatry, whatever. Having like an ADHD coach was the most helpful thing I've ever done. She was like, why don't you eat healthy? And I was like, I don't have the materials. She's like, why don't you have that? And I was like, because I don't like going to the grocery store. And it, like, she helped me really find like the root of a lot of my like little neuroticisms. And that was one of them, is that I hate going to the grocery store. Why? Because I don't know what to cook, because I don't have any recipes. So the fact that Blue Apron like solves all of that, because they give me the recipes and they give me the food and I don't mind cooking it. So that's really helped that. But yeah, I went off my medicine for a little while because of an insurance issue, which, just fuck insurance companies, by the way. And I felt like crap. I couldn't do anything. And I was like, I have got to do something, because I know that there are things in my life, like my diet and my, you know, like these habits that I have that make this happen. But a lot of it I can mask with my ADHD mess. And I use that as like a crutch for some things. And it's like a slow, I feel like as someone with ADHD, like I'm like, okay, I'm going to go super hard. I go super hard into everything. Like all of a sudden, just everything is like completely different. And then like, obviously that's not sustainable. So I always fall out of that habit. But this time I'm trying to like ease into it, which has worked out much better. Like, okay, first I'm going to fix my diet, and I'm not going to like completely change my diet. I'm just going to get Blue Apron and try to, so for, I know for those days that I have those meals that I'll be fine. On the days that I don't, you know, I'm still working my way into dealing with that. But the fact that now I have something in place that's permanent, I don't think about it, I don't have to deal with it, it's been a lot of help.
Yeah, that rules. I also want to clarify that I think I need to be on my ADHD medicine. Like, I don't think like it cured my ADHD eating better or anything like that. But just some of that fuzziness that's even there when I take my medicine was kind of gone. Sleeping a little better. I think it's just because I eat such junk. And for a week, I'm like giving my body a break. But I'm similar to you. I actually don't mind cooking, but everything has to be laid out for me. Because otherwise, like, I'm not one that like knows enough to like know that like this ingredient will do this thing to it.
Right.
But Shannon, my wife, loves cooking and is really good at it. And so when I like, and she's like she's an advocate for me to be healthy. So like when I told her like I kind of wanted to change gears for a little bit, she was like all in it. And, you know, so like with the exception of last night, because my kids were on a rampage, you know, I've gotten off work and dinner's just been ready. Like that's been a huge boost for me in terms of like just being able to like not think about what I'm going to eat, just sit down, eat. Know that she like knows what I'm thinking on my diets. Just beyond lucky for that.
Yeah, you are lucky. Because, dude, let me tell you that I apparently had... Okay, so for the longest time, there's been all these contraptions in the kitchen, you know, like ever since I was a child, that I'm like, I don't know what this does, but I know I could use it as a weapon. And, you know, just like all this stuff that like, to me, as someone who likes to touch and be tactile, like I just like playing with it, you know, slapping things back and forth. And when I was starting to cook some stuff and they were like, okay, you need to put in the garlic. And they were like, the thinly cut garlic or whatever. And my ass is over here with a knife trying to cut garlic. And my roommate comes in and she's like, what the hell are you doing? And I'm like, I'm cutting the garlic. And she's like, why aren't you using the garlic cutter thing? I don't know what it's called. And I'm like, huh? There's this contraption that I've known all my life. I have never known what it does. I thought it was like a fun thing to slap back and forth, but you put the garlic in it and you can just squeeze it and the garlic comes out. And I was like, what?
It's amazing.
It is amazing. So
I'm used to like using a knife and...
Yeah. Dude, I guarantee you have this in your kitchen, because I've had this in a kitchen I've lived in forever and just never known what it does. But I had my roommate take... I was like, all right, what other things in this kitchen do I not know how to use? And she went all through... She's like, well, this is how you can do this, and you can use this to cut noodles and like yada yada. I'm like, oh my God. I thought a knife was the only utensil in this kitchen. So that knowing your tools, I think, I mean, it applies the same in development, dude. Know your tools. Like if you have bugs in your system, you got Honey Badger. Segway. See, these are the segues we could have, Jason. We can talk about these bugs. Yes, listeners, we use Honey Badger because we love Honey Badger. Honey Badger loves us, supports the podcast. Please support Honey Badger by going to Honey Badger, signing up, telling them that you heard about them on Remote Ruby, and you will get some deals. And honestly, we had this discussion at work. This is a real story. We're having this discussion at work about what tools we use because at one point different teams were brought together from like we bought out like a company or whatever and they had software. And now depending on the app you use, there are different tools being used on it. And I was like, okay, this is a disaster. I mean, it wasn't a disaster. It's just in my mind as someone who's so used to like, you know, I need order or I feel like in chaos. And I was like, we're starting to have these conversations about, all right, what bug tracker do we use? What this, what that? And they were like, all right, well, what bug tracker should we use? And I was like, Honey Badger. And Eric was like, Honey Badger. And everyone else was like, I don't care. And they were like, why do you guys like Honey Badger so much? And I was like, oh, sit down and let me explain to you.
Yeah, I use Honey Badger on HopeGrid, FieldHelp, and it's just reliable, easy to use. I like it.
It is the absolute easiest thing to add in the app. I like that the best because an unnamed competitor has a gem that you can spend like hours configuring and it'd still be wrong. And it's just, there's stuff, it's just complicated. I don't want it to be complicated.
Not to mention, they're some of my favorite people ever. They always, like when they sponsor something, they always do like a conference, they always do the coolest ways to sponsor. I've been to a French restaurant thanks to Honey Badger. I've been, when I was in Phoenix, I got to ride in a bus to an In-N-Out Burger thanks to Honey Badger. So they just, they're
good
fun.
People. Good people, good times, good air monitoring. Honey Badger. I did it.
That's impressive.
Dude, I'm telling you, we can segue these in. Anyway, we should probably talk about Ruby a little bit. Have you tried Ruby 3?
What?
Have you tried Ruby 3?
No, I read about it and I thought, I should try that. And then I haven't.
I have tried the Ruby 3s.
Tell me what I should try at a Ruby 3.
So I know that there's Ractors and things. That my small brain is really working overtime to try to comprehend that. But I haven't even really been, I'm not really focused about that specifically. It's more like, okay, here's an opportunity for me to contribute to projects, because if I can install Ruby 3 and start using things like I normally do, and then I can start finding issues and I can maybe upstream fixes for those or just open issues and be like, hey, this isn't working with Ruby 3. This is a specific issue, or like maybe it's just a version with this preview that's messing this up. Another thing I've been doing is going on, I did this specifically for Bridgetown. I found a bug in Ruby 3 in Bridgetown, and I was like, you know what would be really nice is if they not only trying to fix this bug, but also I opened a PR to add matrix builds to their GitHub Actions. So now it will check Ruby 2.7, it'll run against Ruby 2 or 3, and it also adds a few other versions to it. And pro tip for anyone out there trying to configure GitHub Actions, the official GitHub setup Ruby, don't use that. For your sake of mind, do not use that. It is crap. It doesn't have all the versions on it, etc. Ruby has its own action set, and it's literally like Ruby/setup or something like that.
It's cool.
So use Ruby's version. If you can't find it, literally if you go into the GitHub setup Ruby, like there's an issue open that's like, this should be deprecated. And that will link you to the one you should be using, which allows you to have access to test against Ruby head and, you know, Ruby dev and like all these other versions, and you can use the specific version. It's a beautiful sign. So yeah, that's what I've been doing with it. I have not been using all the crazy new features. I've been more so like, how can I help people, but also still use cool stuff? And I've been you know, playing using Ruby 3, but also trying to do things as normally. And then if I find bugs, I try to fix or open issues.
That's cool. I feel like with Ruby, and I could be completely wrong on this, but I started Ruby 1.9.3. It was like the major version out. It was probably before 1.9.3, but it was 1.9. And I remember the change from 1.9 to 2.0 not feeling like a very big change. And I think that's because the majority of the changes came between 1.8 and 1.9. And I kind of feel like, with the exception of the Raptor and scheduler stuff, that 2 to 3 doesn't feel like a big change, because maybe we've gotten, you know, from 2.0 to what we're at now, maybe that, like, you know, that really good about releasing like incremental changes each year.
Right. And putting stuff in. I'm not aware if they're going to do a 2.8. I don't think so. But I think
that's kind of up in the air right now. It feels like it's either going to be 2.8 right. or 3.0.
Well, because they put the JIT into 2.7, which I have not used, but that's only because it doesn't really help Rails at all right now. So right. I haven't really used JIT, but I know that's in there, and I know it's even better in Ruby 3.
Did RBS ship as an experimental in 2.7?
Oh, dude, I forgot to tell you about this. Guess who got a commit to Ruby? This is directly related.
I am going to say you.
Good guess. Yes, I was playing with RBS. I think RBS is cool. And RBS right now, to answer your question, is a separate repository. And it's kind of confusing. I think it's right now a separate gem. But I found literally just a typo in RBS. And I was like, fix. And I was like, yes. It was a great... Dude, it was a great day. And the best part is that, for anyone out there listening, I spent multiple days just like wrestling with the imposter syndrome of, maybe this isn't a typo, even though it was clearly a typo. And it was like a typo in one of the commands, because all the commands are like RBS this or RBS that. And one of them said TBS. And I was like, well, maybe it's not a typo. And I'm like, all right. I was like, Femera, tell me that this isn't a typo. And I was like, I need someone smart to make me feel valid to do this. Imposter syndrome never goes away, people. Yes, RBS is a separate package.
Okay, so I guess now with 3, it ships with the gem. I mean, RBS is cool because I'm looking at it, and it's not... Maybe I haven't looked at it enough, but Sorbet, the type definitions that come from Sorbet are inline. It's like comments, if I'm not wrong, and I find them kind of like cryptic. And like looking at RBS, it's, you know, attribute reader name colon string, messages array, you know, and the type is message. Also, like, there's union type, so you can give it user or bot. And then it's also cool, yeah, method overloading is supported. So, yeah, I don't know. I think I would be interested to see, more than anything, if having something like RBS would allow, this is just an ignorant question, but would allow people to build better like editor support. Whereas if like I had a user class and I had like first name and last name bind as strings, and I declare that a name method like returns a string, I'd be interested to see if people build cool like VS Code Ruby tools for that.
The answer is yes. The answer is also in terms of actually using Ruby typing in VS Code, yes, as well. Because what really confused me at first, because number one, I really wanted to like Sorbet, and I really didn't. And this has nothing to do with about, you know, the amount of work they did. They created an awesome package, and the ecosystem is cool, and Shopify put a lot into that, and there's cool packages coming out for it. I really don't like the SIG stuff. Like you said, it goes into your code, and it's not a comment, it's a method.
Ah, okay.
I really didn't like that. And I also, it was just so confusing. Like, it was so hard to type your adder readers. That was like the worst part of all. And I spent a long time, and I was like, I hate this. I absolutely love the people that built this, but I do not like this. And so I kind of went back into, you know, the Nate Hopkins, like, duck typing is awesome and everything and blah, blah, blah. And RBS came out, and I was like, this I like. I was like, I like that it's in a separate file. I mean, at first I didn't like that because I kind of wanted it to be like TypeScript, but at the same time, no, I don't. So I like that it's in a separate file. The gradual typing is really nice. And what I didn't understand is if you look in the docs and start reading through, like the docs are very thorough, but what's not thorough is how the frick you use it. So it took me a while, but then I finally came across a slideshow from Ruby Kaigi that was actually then incorporated to the docs. In order to use RBS, the easiest tool to use is something called Steep. And Steep is a gem, and it literally is called, it just says gradual typing for Ruby. And basically what it is it allows you to like run that thing that checks the types. You know, because if you're looking at the RBS documentation, the first question is, I want to run something that tells me if my types are correct. And I don't want to have to like keep hitting command on every single file. I want this to like check. That is what Steep will do. There's also a VS Code extension for Steep. So yes, thank God for these people. I'm pretty sure I went and found the person who was building that tool. And I was like, I'm going to sponsor them on GitHub. And they weren't accepting it. I was about to message them or email them and be like, dude, I want to sponsor you for doing this. But that's the state of it. So if you want to try out Steep, I've been trying to write a blog post about this and then just getting really sidetracked with like shiny stuff instead. But because there's no one really writing, I haven't seen really anything written about this, and I think it's really cool. So yes, if you want to use RBS, use Steep. Your life will be easier. I've just saved you a lot of research.
I should look into that more. I use SolarGraph with VS Code and I like it. I usually have to set it up like per project though, because you have to include like that Rails file to get it to work well with Rails. And one thing it makes me want to do is actually leave like comments in my code, but I don't do that because I feel kind of useless if nobody else is using SolarGraph for that.
Right. I don't use SolarGraph anymore.
Really?
Well, I didn't realize that. Jared White, shout out, maintainer of Bridgetown, shout out Bridgetown for life, hashtag static, hashtag, in, I don't know. Jared said something to me that I didn't realize, that I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was something about, he was looking at my setup for something, and he's like, well, I don't use SolarGraph. And I was like, what do you mean? Don't you kind of have to in order to get like blah, blah, blah? And he's no. And I thought he was talking loony things. You know, he's from Seattle. I was like, there's a lot of smoke up there. Maybe he's confused.
Is he from Seattle?
Which is the one with the bridge. Wait, that's Portland.
I thought he was in Oregon, yeah.
Yes, geography. It is a thing. But yes, he's from Portland. I was like, it's very smoky up there. He's probably very confused. But no, he's actually right. You can use the VS Code tree setting stuff. And you don't need SolarGraph. And SolarGraph works like, it gives you like slightly different abilities, but I can do the same thing that I don't care about a lot of the stuff that comes out of SolarGraph. The only thing I care about is when I see a method, I would like to click on it and go to that method. And you can do that without SolarGraph.
You'll have to teach me the way.
I will teach you the way. And I want to teach everyone the way, actually, because I've been, my ADHD like concentration for this week has been like maker communities. I don't know. I don't even know how I got into it. It's just, I'm sure I'll be interested in this week, and next week it'll be something else. But one thing I did start working on is I want to create a course or like just a write-up or whatever, something that I would like to be paid for, basically. However it is put out, that tells you how to use VS Code with Ruby, but not in like the, oh, just add this extension and add this extension. No, I'm talking like I have spent years making it like the best possible thing it could be. And I have gone through all these setup instructions and I'm like, well, you don't need to use this extension. Like a lot of them tell you to use the RuboCop extension. Well, you don't need to use this. You just have to set up the VS Code Ruby extension correctly. And that is hard. Figuring out how to set that up is difficult, but I think I've finally figured it all out. I'm testing like a brand new setup of VS Code on my work laptop and everything's been working perfectly. So at some point, I would like for that to be a thing that someone pays me money for, but I will absolutely help you do it. So
I would legit pay money for that because there's not a lot of VS Code Ruby content that's not, these are the plugins I use.
Yeah, so. There's not. And so I think I can make that.
You said something earlier that made me want to circle back to a thought I had this week. I've been writing a lot of JavaScript.
I'm so sorry.
I actually really like JavaScript, but I don't say that much.
I don't like kidding.
I don't like the JavaScript. I don't like having to rewrite the same JavaScript I write on the server. But if I'm just in a JavaScript environment, like, I'm happy. But it's made me think a lot about TypeScript and how I would probably really like TypeScript.
You don't use it, right? We talked about this last week.
I don't use it, but I'm interested in it. And I know you had been interested in it. So I'm just curious to hear your thoughts on TypeScript and why you like it.
TypeScript is difficult. It's very C-sharp in nature because the designer of C-sharp also designed TypeScript. I say that only because someone else told me that, aka Nate, because I have never used C-sharp. So it's hard. It's kind of hard at first to wrap your head around it. But the community is absolutely there. There's a lot of people who are behind it. So number one, the thing I like about TypeScript is that there is a lot of resources out there. VS Code is absolutely fantastic in writing TypeScript. That's number two. Number three is that, unlike you, okay, I feel like the reason that you like writing JavaScript somewhat is because you're good at writing JavaScript somewhat. The reason I despise JavaScript is because I absolutely suck at writing JavaScript, and it frustrates me and it makes me angry, and that's why I don't like it, which is a very immature response, but you know what? I'm human, so I'm just going to take this one. And TypeScript makes it easier to write JavaScript because my JavaScript is screwy and I don't understand it. I kind of understand it. I'm like kind of over-exaggerating the rate at which I don't understand it, but I have to kind of sit there with the docs to a degree. But TypeScript really helps me out writing JavaScript, because as someone who doesn't understand it as well, it helps spot a lot of bugs that I would not have caught. That's not to say it doesn't come with its own frustrations. It absolutely does. But in terms of like, if you kind of remove like all the like pieces away from it, in terms of just writing TypeScript or just writing JavaScript, I would choose TypeScript. And I think also that it seems to be the winner. I don't think that's a question anymore. More and more people are writing TypeScript. A lot of companies are banking on TypeScript. VS Code is written in TypeScript. Obviously, Microsoft is behind it. So I don't know. I need help writing JavaScript, and TypeScript helps me. That's why I like it.
It's cool. I feel like I say this a lot, and maybe I just don't have enough experience, but I just feel like TypeScript would help me in the areas like you said, like the things you wouldn't catch. For me, it's just like things that I don't necessarily have to think about. It just tells me like, this is wrong. So, okay, I fix that real quick. I don't know. I feel like that made me more proficient, but maybe not. But we're also out of time, so.
Yeah, well, all I have to say about it is it's going to take a bit to get used to it, but it's truly like having a pair. Cool. Someone that's just like, hey, by the way, bro, you forgot that right there. And you're trying to send this thing a number and it's not going to take that. It's nice. Highly recommend.
Very cool. Well, I'm sorry to those who are less interested in our personal self-care ramblings, but I hope that the Ruby content towards the end made up for it.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some people that think that, but I've asked people why they listen to Remote Ruby before, and they're like, I like listening to you, Jason, and Chris just talk. And I listen to podcasts for the same reason. So, and if they're not, you're not getting a refund. So that, you know, that's off the table.
All right.
All right, Jason. Have a good week, my dude.
See ya.